Greetings and welcome to Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we are looking at another, you gotta listen to this. This is a kind of a rite of passage, you know, when you come on the show or when you're part of the show, every between season, we do a couple of these, you gotta listen to this episodes. And it's a rule that Hammond and I have to do it as well for each other. We pick an album, we make the other person listen to it with no pre-warning or here's what you're going to think of it or any sort of setup. We just say, this is the album, listen to it, and we'll talk about it. And this time it's my turn. I made you listen to, we're getting right into it, the album Yo-Yo by the band Bourgeois Tag.
So, yeah. And I don't think this ever crossed my radar. And I know it didn't cross my radar in the late 80s when this came out.
Really? Because I would think that at the very least, maybe the album as a whole, of course, wouldn't cross your path. But there's a very prominent single that actually got up to number 38 in the Billboard charts. Like it actually became a one-hit wonder for the band. I Don't Mind at All. Listen to the album, it doesn't sound like the rest of the album, but really I'm thinking about it, a lot of the songs in the album don't sound like the rest of the album. It sounds like a lot of different styles, all kind of centered around a
toy matinee,
a
filter.
Genre toy matinee,
a toy matinee
template.
Yeah these guys definitely, I don't know if they knew them, if they listened, if they were drinking buddies, I don't know.
Well, certainly could have been drinking buddies, knowing the story of Brent Bourgeois. But this album, and it's funny because this album was the second album that they released and was the second album I heard from them. I didn't discover them because of the single. I had a friend who introduced me to their music from their first album. And when the second album came out, I'm like, oh, this is great. This is even better than the first. And then, you know, this really out of the public eye, off the radar band gets a single that gets actually played on regular radio as well as MTV. And all of a sudden it's like, all right, I knew these guys back when, and then they kind of faded off into obscurity.
So this came out, what, 87, 88?
87. Okay. I believe
87. I wasn't listening to much pop music. I was listening to a lot of heavier, more experimental kind of things. And I don't know. That's why I think that's probably why, because this type of music I did not discover until I was in college. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't rediscover and actually gain a real appreciation for until I was as an adult.
That makes sense. You kind of grow up with the music you listen to in high school and kind of expand upon that.
Yeah.
And so it wouldn't have been, makes sense it wouldn't have been on your radar.
But then,
you know, when you started listening.
For instance, like when I was in college, I worked at a dance club. So of course I had to broaden my horizons because of working at the dance club.
Sure.
And that's how I picked up on a lot of the 80s dance music and 80s kind of pop music at the time, is because of that. So I will say that the sound of this album takes me back to a very, very specific time in the late 80s. And it's just the way it's mixed, the instrumentation, the way it's EQ'd. There's all this stuff that just screams like late 80s pop. And
the keyboard sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot. I mean, this does feel like a 1987 album.
Yeah. And it's funny though, even saying that, I still think it aged well because the songwriting is still good. So as dated as it may sound, I still came away having a really good time and not going, oh my gosh, I feel like I just came out of a time machine. It sounds like One Night in Bangkok. It sounds super dated, but it still holds up.
Yeah. It's not like listening to a Lover Boy album.
No.
Everything about it feels 1980s. No, this, the instrumentation, I really, that's a great review. And it was kind of what I was hoping when I picked this album for you, because I knew that because of this feels more Kevin Gilbert-y and Toy Matinee-y than I expected or that I remembered it would. And then beyond that, you get some production by Todd Rundgren, who's kind of tangentially prog, I would say. Yeah. I don't think he's fully into prog, but I think he's on the outskirts of prog.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely in the Venn diagram of pop and prog. He's in that middle section.
He is. Okay. Oh, I like that. Pop and prog. Pop and prog. Prop.
Pop and prog. We get that when we go out to the Applebee's.
Is that what you get? Yeah, it's delicious. They sometimes oversalt it, though. Yeah, so this is produced by Todd Rundgren, which you definitely hear on a couple of the tracks. Definitely feels like a Todd Rundgren thing.
Yeah.
And as you brought up in your review of it, the songwriting, the lyrics, I think are, for me, what puts it way over the top, with a couple of great examples.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about a couple of those. But
and I say, one of the things that I think kind of makes this hold up and kind of the test is if you strip away everything except a piano or a guitar and you just have them sing the lyrics with just an acoustic guitar or an acoustic piano, and if it still holds up, then you know you have good songwriting and you could do things about it or around it. And I think this is one of those albums that if someone actually said, oh, let's do a track-by-track tribute and pull in a bunch of bands that, you know, that are around nowadays that could do this, I think it could still be an exceedingly cool album because of just the bones are so good.
I think so. Good foundation. All right. So a little bit of background. Brent Bourgeois, originally from New Orleans, moved to New Jersey in Dallas, Texas. Met a guy named Larry Tagg, and the two of them made their way to San Francisco area, the Bay Area, California. Played in a band together called Uncle Rainbow, and then they moved to Sacramento and formed Bourgeois Tagg with Lyle Workman, Michael Urbano, and Scott Moon. And Lyle Workman, probably most recently best known for movie soundtracks. He was a composer for Superbad, The 40-Year-Old Virgin, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, like a lot of the Judd Apatow and Jon Favreau
When they met the first time, do you think he said Guten Tag?
I'm sure exactly that's exactly what he said.
or when he left, he went, you're it.
Yeah.
Tag,
you're it. I get it. Yeah, I get it. Anyway. they formed Bourgeois Tagg. They released a self-titled album in 1984. 1985, and then they released this follow-up, 1987, Yo-Yo, with Todd Rundgren. Todd didn't produce the first album, just produced the second one. And they had their hit. It looked like things were just starting to pick up for them, but then the band kind of broke up. Brent Bourgeois got a little bit into the drinking and kind of steered into a bad place, had to go to rehab, and then came back, released a couple solo albums, and then kind of evolved into a Christian music artist. And that's kind of where he is today, working with bands like Michael W. Smith, Jars of Clay. He was actually vice president of A&R at Word Records in Nashville for a few years. But he's back in California now. That's kind of the whole background and story of Bourgeois Tagg. Let's talk about this album, because there are a few tracks on here I really want to highlight. I don't know if there's some specifically you want to talk about as well.
Yeah, there are a few. We don't need to go track by track, but there are a few. So you call yours out, and if they're the same as mine, then I'll add my stuff. And if not, I'll call mine out later.
Let me talk. I'll talk first. I was going to go track, like, start at the beginning. I'm jumping right to my favorite track on the album and one of my favorite songs of all time, because the lyric writing, the songwriting on this song is, I don't want to say it paints a picture because that's kind of in the title. The song is "What's Wrong with This Picture."
What is wrong with the woman sitting on the bed with the perfume on? She's holding the hand of a very well-dressed man.
And it creates such an image, such a visual description that I almost wish there was a music video for it. I almost wish I could make a music video for it, because I feel like it would be so, it'd be like sort of animated with this drawing that's kind of unfolding. Because the whole premise of the song is it's describing this scene to you piece by piece. And as more of these pieces are revealed, more of the story of what's going on is explained. Like, there's a woman sitting on the bed, she's got perfume on, she's holding the hand of a really well-dressed dude who's got some muddy pants. And why does he have muddy pants? Oh, is there a ladder in the garden? Why is there a letter in the garden? Oh no, her husband's coming up the driveway. And it's like, those aren't quite the lyrics.
So, but it's, so it's a crying shame you don't know anyone. Well, you're an artist for one, but it's a crying shame you don't know anybody who's good at animation and knows their way around, I don't know, comics coast to coast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this would be a fun one. Although I don't see it in a comic style. What I visualize is like a Highlights magazine style. Yeah, that's about 423rd on my to-do list of cool projects I have an idea about, but don't have the wherewithal to make happen. Anyway, but that's like you said, my favorite song on the album and one of my favorite songs of all time. It's just so well written and paints such an amazing mind picture.
Yeah. And I liked that one too. And it was one of the ones that stood out as being most, one of the ones that stood out as most Toy Matinee-ish. Actually, the one that I put down as the most Toy Matinee-ish, most Kevin Gilbert-y, was Coma, the last track.
Wasn't about to abandon ship. I heard the
That felt like it was pulled right out of a Kevin Gilbert album. It was kind of crazy.
It totally does. Yeah, and picked up the Beatles' A Day in the Life on the way too.
Yeah, uh-huh. And actually the I Don't Mind actually screamed a huge Beatles influence.
There's quite a few, and I don't mind at all. Probably the biggest part of that that's a Beatles influence is the string instruments, which you don't hear, again, anywhere else on the album.
Uh-huh.
But there's this kind of She's Leaving Home or The Long and Winding Road kind of string instrument feel to it.
Yep.
And I'm sure there's some Beatles influence there that's bubbling up to the surface.
And then Paper and Pencil.
Yeah.
There are some vocal effects in there that I wasn't sure if I liked or not. Like, I kept hearing it and I'm like, do I like this? Is this good? Is this distracting? Is it detracting from the song? And I came away with it going, you know what? It's making me think about the song. So therefore it's good.
Whether you like it at the time, if it makes you think about the song afterwards, that's how I feel about some movies.
Yeah.
That if I come out of the movie and it's like, all right, well, that feels like I just completed that. If I come out of a movie and I'm like, I'm not sure if I like that movie. And then 3 days later, I'm thinking, God, that weird scene with the such and such. And wow, how that actor kind of made me feel like it was. Da-da-da. Then it's like, all right, I guess I liked it. Because if I'm still thinking about it, that's better than, all right, well, Gemini Man was a thing. I couldn't tell you any more about the plot than Will Smith is a guy chasing himself. And all right, there you go.
So there are
as a couple, an example of a recent.
So there are a couple songs that are on here that have to do with the mind, about pictures, about drawing, about, you know, imagination. Is there like a through line that I just didn't get?
If there is, then that is it. It never felt intentional, but absolutely mind, mental health, that sort of thing. Coma, waiting for the worm to turn, out of my mind, of course, kind of says in the title. And even Best of All Possible Worlds, the lead off track. Here's a little bit of trivia about me. I don't know. I've talked about my love for question and answer songs. When a band releases a song and then another band releases kind of a response to it, like Southern Man and Sweet Home Alabama is a good example, or Judy's Turn to Cry, which was a follow-up of It's My Party and I'll Cry If I Want To, stuff like that. I like songs that sequel and relate to other songs in that way. Another kind of song that I like that I almost tried collecting is, appropriately, our list songs. And Mediate by INXS is a great example of that. Lions After Slumber by Scritti Politti. Life is a Rock, But the Radio Rolled Me, which is like a list of bands. 88 Lines About 44 Women. Things like that. I really, really like list songs for whatever reason.
So does So What by Metallica fall into that?
Oh, I need to listen to that. I know the title, but I don't. Is that a list song?
It's a cover of a song by Anti Nowhere League. But it. I'm going to cut this out because it's totally inappropriate. But he makes a list of the things he's.
Oh, that's awesome! Why
it starts with I the goat and the sheep.
I said just bleep that out. Yeah. Keep it in. Bleep it out. Oh, that's hilarious. Okay, I gotta. I'm going to have to go listen to that. That's really sounds great. Anyway, so list songs. And that's a great list song. Talking about a Chinese telephone book, food for a dog that he doesn't have anymore, shoes for a wife he never quite wed. You know, it's like, I really like, you know, this thought of a songwriter, whether they're doing it legitimately or fictionally, looking around and taking inventory of their life and saying, how did I get to this place where I am? And here are all the things in my life that represent where I am.
Yeah.
I love that.
As I look at the titles, the more of it, and since you said mental health and kind of well-being, mental well-being, the whole album, Best of Both Worlds, Cry Like a Baby is about depression and sadness, Pencil, Paper, Imagination, Out of My Mind, 15 Minutes of the Sun.
For me, that's just an Andy Warhol reference.
Yes.
I mean, it's basically everyone gets 15 minutes and then bye-bye is kind of the lyric. But
then you have stress, which is stress and coma. Yeah. So it all kind of ties into this mental well-being. And even if it is 15 minutes in the sun, which is the Andy Warhol thing, it's that that you got your 15 minutes. What are you going to do with it?
Right. Yeah. It is a mental health thing. Like it is a mind thing. So, okay. Well, whether or not it was intentional, and it certainly could have been prophetic to what was going to be happening to Brent Bourgeois, you know, like, kind of fallen off the wagon and having to go into rehab, there could have been some introspectiveness that was going on at the time of writing this album that said, man, something just doesn't feel right. Let's put this on into lyrics.
And even that list where you're looking around, taking inventory of your life, people do that all the time when they're at that kind of that turning point between one thing or another thing. And they look around and go, how did I get here? And you start making those lists and doing that inventory.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you like this.
No, I did a lot.
There's a couple of videos. Like they have a video for I Don't Mind at All, which is good. There's a video for Waiting for the Worm to Turn, which you might have to watch. And listeners, you know, you might have to watch it as well and see what you think about it. It's a weird like, oh, what a great time it is to be alive. And let's watch a bunch of people jump off a cliff. Because it's like a whole bunch of people from all different walks of life come up to a cliff and then jump off of it like lemmings. And the band is kind of sitting there watching this happen, but they almost look like they're leaders or pioneers who are maybe not encouraging, but certainly not stopping people from jumping off the cliff.
Well, there's some social commentary for you.
A little heavy-handed,
if you could go too far there.
Absolutely, yeah. Listening to this also kind of brought back my memory of the first solo album that Brent Bourgeois did, which I've got to find. It somewhere in my basement. It's not in my CD library, unfortunately, and it's not one that I've ripped, so it's not my digital library, so I've got to locate it. But it's his first solo album, which has Christine McVie from Fleetwood Mac, Randy Jackson, who was in Journey and, of course, on American Idol. And he's got a cover of Time of the Season. Like, it's something that at the time could have easily been an inspiration for there being a Coverville. Is a cover like that I would have played for somebody and said, check out this cover, it's so good. Because I can remember it and I just gotta find it. But not available for sale online digitally, or else I would just say, screw it, I'll find the CD eventually, but I'll pay my $10 and buy it this way.
There are a few times where I've really wanted the hard copy, but I just can't find it. So I find it digitally just to kind of pacify and scratch that itch, knowing that at some point I will find the real deal.
Oh, for me, it's a day later. It's basically a day after I buy something that I find my original copy of it or the thing that I was replacing.
See, the way it works for me is I will say, oh, I really want, I think a great example of this is I want the Stars Hearing Aid album. And it's got a lot of other stuff on there other than just the Stars song, which is great. I had it. I lost it. I want it back. So I have Stars and digital, but I want the CD again. But like, it's like $100 on eBay. I'm not paying $100 for a CD that is more of a nostalgic grab than a I need this for my life grab.
Yeah, and that you know you have somewhere.
Yeah, probably. It's not in my house. It's in my mom's house somewhere.
Gotcha. Okay. Very cool. Well, Hammond, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I was hoping that, like I said, after I listened to it, that you'd see some sort of Toy Matinee, Kevin Gilbert-y kind of feel to it.
I feel like they were next door neighbors when they were working on these. Especially the Toy Matinee album. His solo stuff is there, but that is very specifically the Toy Matinee album. Like these songs could have been easily mixed in with "Turn It On Again" or "Turn It On Salvador," "Last Playing Out." Those songs. Very easily.
Ballad of Jenny Ledge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Right. Yeah, I don't mind at all. It could easily be the precursor in the story to the Ballad of Jenny Ledge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you'll have to go out and listen to the first album at some point.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I like about these shows is because in many, many cases, these are albums that are about groups that we will not get a chance to do a full soundography on, whether they don't have enough things or it's just not going to fit. This is a way to get those ones in there without having to kind of do a double header on a band because they just had like two albums or whatever.
Yeah, no, that's why I saved, because normally I would say, oh, I'm going to put this in the list for soundography. But when it's two albums, it's like, all right, it's going to mean our five songs list is going to be a third or half of their catalog when you put them both together.
Yeah.
So that's why this one worked out well to do as a one-off, as you got to listen to this.
Yep.
Coming up next, if you're a patron, you're going to get a special movie episode of Soundography. This is where we look at movies that have a very good music connection, the music force is strong with this film. Go ahead.
Yeah. So we're doing Quadrophenia. And when we talked about it last time, it was on Amazon Prime. And I ended up having to find it on HBO Max.
Cool. Well, good news is I have both of those. So if it's on HBO Max, then that's where I'll watch it myself.
Yeah.
And that's where listeners can watch it. And if they're patrons, they'll get an extra episode of Soundography where we talk about it.
Yeah.
And who's in that movie?
I'm gonna make a guess who.
Okay. Oh, not the guess who. Actually, to be honest, unlike Tommy, I don't think the Who is in Quadrophenia.
They don't.
I think
but yeah, Sting is.
Sting is, yes, a young Sting.
Yep, a young Sting.
A young punky Sting.
Pre-Sting.
A young, tiny, painful Sting.
This is long before Dune.
It was early Police, yeah. Right? The band. He was in No Exit, I think, before the Police.
Yeah, I think so.
Or Last Exit. I can't remember the name of the...
Yeah.
It was Something Exit was the name of the band he was in. Anyway, that's what's coming up on the next patron episode of Soundography. But if you're not a patron, shame on you, just kidding, then you're going to get the regular season of Soundography coming very, very soon. So stick around, keep an eye on your feed for that. We've got the next season coming up. We've got the music already picked and we're really, really excited about what we've got in store.
I've already done the notes and squatted on a few songs already.
Oh, well, the benefit of doing the notes is you get first pick. You get to assemble your softball team before I even get to pick the really good guy. Anyway, that is going to do it for this edition of You Gotta Listen to This. For Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibbett saying thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.